The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome, listeners, to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z here, right here on Progressive Radio Network, and we have returning guest Susan Weed, the voice of the wise woman tradition and one of the founding grandmothers of the herbal renaissance. And she's going to be doing part two of her wonderful book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way, Woman, actually, because we'll be talking about men today, men's health, second part of her book. Now, of course, Susan's published various books, including New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Breast Cancer, Breast Health. I love that one. That was one of my favorite ones. The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, the second Wise Woman Herbal, and Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Years. Susan is a teacher. She offers correspondence courses, online education, and has taught at many different places, including Yale Nurse Midwifery School, American College of Nurse Midwives, Bastyr Naturopathic College, Rocky Mountain Center for Botanical Studies, ABC, American Botanical Council, and internationally. Susan, it's a pleasure to have you back.
Dream blessings. It's a delight to be back with you, Dr. Z.
Nice. Before we get started, let's just recap the book and talk a little bit about the six steps of healing that is so critical for people to, I like to say, overstand when reading your book.
Yes, you know, it's true that I love the plants, and I'm very much a believer in that the real health care that we all deserve is herbal medicine. Herbal medicine is people's medicine. But I never felt comfortable having there be a fight between me and anybody else about healing. Certainly healing is not a place that we want to be at war. And so many years ago, I created the word complementary medicine. And the six steps of healing is a way of ordering all of the different kinds of medicines that we can use. I call them serenity medicine, story medicine, mind medicine, lifestyle medicine, alternative medicine, pharmaceutical medicine, and high-tech medicine. And these are also the six steps of healing, which is do nothing, collect information, engage the energy, nourish and tonify, stimulate and sedate, use drugs, and break and enter. And so each one of my books, including Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way, follows this pattern. So that if you have a problem, say you go to the doctor and the doctor says you should get a PSA test. Well, more about that, you should probably say no. But suppose you say yes and the doctor calls and says, oh, your PSA is elevated. We need to do this, that, and the other thing. So you can look up in my book, PSA test, and what to do if your PSA test is elevated. There's a little help box, and it says, before you get a biopsy and before you take any drugs, do these things. Right. And then it also goes through each one of those steps for you that to do nothing, even for 1 or 2 months and be retested, is a perfectly reasonable reaction. And so on through each one of these possibilities, ending with the biopsy. And, I wasn't aware that generally when they do a prostate biopsy, it's not just one little sample of tissue, but there's up to 12 samples of tissue taken.
Ouch. And that's often what people complain about. But let's backtrack and talk about us men, or I could speak for me, actually. You know, as a naturopathic doctor and also a professional herbalist with the American Herbalist Guild, I can say, Susan, that I don't see a lot of men. They just are recalcitrant to come into the office to take good care of themselves. Maybe it's cultural, maybe you have some comments on that, until they stop working down there, if you know what I mean.
I do.
Then they come to the office. I appreciate your comments on all that.
Well, certainly this is one of the reasons that most of my books have been focused on women's health issues. Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, of course, does include some information on fertility for men. And my big green book, Healing Wise, the second Wise Woman Herbal, is for everybody. It talks about the three traditions and then seven of my favorite herbs. And, of course, they have wonderful effects for both men and women. And men can get breast cancer. Breast cancer, question mark, breast health, exclamation point, certainly gives a nod to men. Men don't go through menopause, but in new menopausal years, the Wise Woman way, I do include a chapter on the idea of male menopause or andropause, as some people call it. But it wasn't until I wrote down there that I made the leap to really include men. And the reason is exactly as you're saying. Women overall seek more health care, seem to be more interested in their health, seem to be more interested in proactive things. But I have a question for you. I think the news has been leaked out that the Preventative Health Services Task Force has recommended against PSA testing, just as they recommended against mammograms.
Yeah, I heard that recently, and I've been saying that for years, that it's, you know, just kind of smoke and mirrors, and it's not really getting at the underlying cause.
Well, and they've actually come out and said that you're more likely to be harmed, and I am wondering what men's reaction is going to be, because a couple of years ago, this same organization came out with basically the same recommendation. It says mammograms, smoke and mirrors, useless, don't do it, and I was so disappointed because women seem to rise up in anger and irritation and say, you cannot take our mammograms away from us.
Sure.
And I thought, how awful. They're finally getting the truth, and they won't even really pay any attention to the truth. And I'm wondering if men are going to say, well, good, I never wanted that PSA test anyhow, or if they're going to say, you can't take it away from us.
Well, you know, there's a big difference between early detection and true prevention. In your book, you really talk about true prevention, looking at it from, you know, a myriad of different perspectives, and in many aspects of men's health, everywhere from the health of the testes to erectile dysfunction to many conditions affecting the prostate, and then, of course, you know, other male things, including some really good formulas that other herbal practitioners throughout the world, very esteemed colleagues of ours, have put together. I've used a lot of these things over the years for the men that do come. And actually, I do have a large male-orientated practice, although, like I said, a majority of women are my patients, but I do see quite a number of men for andropause. So let's talk about that. That's when, because there's even no, you know, if you're into insurance stuff, there's no insurance code for that. So it's not really an entity according to mainstream people, mainstream doctors. If there's no code, ICD-9 code, not that that really matters, but it's just interesting. It's a societal issue, I think, or reflection on what's going on. It's not even looked at yet as an entity.
Well, the actual truth of the matter is that both men and women at puberty become sexually mature and able to create new life. And this happens through a variety of signals. The ones we mostly focus on are hormonal signals. And it is further true that women are only fertile between puberty and menopause, and that menopause basically is an end to a woman's reproductive life. So it is a very clear, distinct, and for many women, shocking hormonal change. We do not find that kind of hormonal change in men. Basically, a man can still father a child even in his 90s. Mm-hmm. There is no time at which a man goes through anything at all like menopause. What happened, and I think you're aware of this, is that it used to be if you wanted to have supplemental testosterone, you had to inject it. And most of us, myself included, don't like needles. We don't like injecting ourselves. So it never really flew very far. Mm. When a new form of testosterone was created that could be used without injection, the manufacturer of this decided that they should create a disease that it would counter. And that disease that they created was andropause. What they did was they actually went out into to United States and tested testosterone levels in men to try to look at what was normal or what was baseline. And what they found was that testosterone levels were all over the place. Men who were perfectly fertile and got good erections could have very low levels of testosterone, counter to what we thought. We thought you had to have high levels of testosterone. Men could have erectile difficulties even with high levels of testosterone. In fact, the National Institutes of Health panel concluded that andropause is completely unproven and testosterone supplementation is called for. The largest and longest term study of giving men testosterone showed no improvement of any kind in energy level, sexual performance, or strength in men given transdermal testosterone supplementation, but it does elevate the risk of prostate cancer. In men older than 45, those with the highest testosterone levels are twice as likely diagnosed with prostate cancer.
However, there's, you know, there is a link between many conditions that men can develop, like cardiovascular disease with their erectile dysfunction, and, you know, certainly the incidence of syndrome X and diabetes and things like that, which certainly may lead to other illnesses which could be masked or called andropause. So really, men go to the doctor and they're put on six different pharmaceuticals, one for the blood sugar, one for cholesterol, one for their moodiness, one for their lack of energy and aches and pains, and so on and so forth. When through tonification, through the green way of healing, could be very beneficial for these men.
I absolutely agree. As a matter of fact, one of my questions when I was writing this book was, why are so many American men taking this little blue pill? What is going on out there?
Right.
And the answer, of course, was pharmaceutical drugs. Men go in, they're told their blood pressure is elevated, they're put on blood pressure lowering drugs, and let's face it, basically an erection is high blood pressure. And when you're on a blood pressure lowering drug, it just doesn't work right.
Right.
Anymore. You go in and you say, I'm anxious, and you're given anti-anxiety or antidepressive medication, and you lose your interest in sex, and you lose your ability as well. And so men resort to pills. When I so agree with you, Dr. Z. Lifestyle changes, even, you know, something as simple as a drinking oat straw infusion. And I'm just a great fan of oat straw. It's an inexpensive herb. It's pretty easy to buy an ounce of oat straw, put it in a quart jar, fill that jar to the top of the boiling water, put a lid on it, let it steep like that for 4 hours or overnight, strain it, and put your oat straw infusion in the refrigerator and drink it throughout the day. Oat straw allows your body to use the testosterone that's already in your body more effectively, so that it gives all of these good effects that you're looking for without increasing the risk of prostate cancer.
So that's different from the actual oatmeal, Susan. That's actually the top of the grain. This is actually, maybe you could explain to listeners
it
a little
is.
More
it's
about
oats.
It's the
grass of the grain that makes the oats.
Okay.
That's what oats, the straw of the oats,
right,
which is the stalk and the leafy material. And that's one of the reasons why it's inexpensive, because it's, as a matter of fact, one of my farming friends saw that I had some oat straw, and he looked at me and he said, you paid $8 a pound for oat straw? He said, I'll sell you a 500-pound bale for under $100.
Wow.
All right,
well,
I said, too much, thank you.
So another one that you talked about in your book here, and is a lot of the botanicals, which over many, many millennia we've called, you know, sort of tonics or adaptogens, particularly like Eleuthero. It's one of my favorite ones, except when the ginseng, they sued the ginseng establishment for, or vice versa.
Yeah,
because they used to call it Siberian ginseng. What was the story on that again?
Right. Well, it's not ginseng.
Yeah. Yeah.
People did call it,
Siberian ginseng.
And, like with many things, it's really just easier to refer it to it by its botanical name, Eleutherococcus or Eleuthero. And, Eleuthero, Guarana, Maca, Saw Palmetto, Tribulus, and Yohimbe are all plants that are rich in steroidal saponins. And those steroidal saponins can undergo a fermentation process in our gut that allows them to be transformed into non-cancer-inducing forms of hormones, including testosterone. I find that for many men, especially, as you say, suddenly the prostate is squeezing down on the tube that lets the urine out of the body, and they're feeling an urgency but not getting much, or they're going but not emptying the bladder, or they're getting up five times a night, or they're dribbling instead of a good stream. And I find that Saw Palmetto, of those steroidal saponin plants that I just mentioned, is certainly one of the best in tincture form. And men that I've mentioned it to continue to get in touch with me and say, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Do you experience that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Very true.
And now Ryan Drum, one of our herbal colleagues,
right,
says, ooh, I don't like to give Saw Palmetto to men because it has a feminizing effect on them.
Yeah, I've read that too. I've read it's kind of like in between. It kind of balances things. And I think David Winston talks about that a little bit in his book, Saw Palmetto for Men and Women.
Yeah.
What about the tribulus? I've read quite a bit about tribulus. Terrestris and different areas of the world where it seems to grow and concentrate the steroidal saponins. And I wanted to talk a little about your comment about how the gut is so important to transform these sterols into the form of hormones, because taking the herb by itself, in other words, doesn't seem to work as well unless it's acting on by the good gut bacteria.
I talk about the three traditions of healing: the scientific tradition, which measures and fixes; the heroic tradition, which balances and cleanses; and the wise woman tradition, which nourishes the wholeness of the unique individual. And these are certainly three very different ways of looking at health and healing, but all three traditions agree that the basis of good health is good gut flora. And especially when it comes to using the so-called hormonally rich plants. In fact, of course, plants generally don't have hormones that are human hormones. At an international herb conference, I was speaking about estrogenic herbs, phytoestrogens, and Stephen Booner was talking about phytotestosterones. And somebody thought that it would be clever to have us teach these two classes at the same time, which was annoying to us because we wanted to go to each other's classes. So we met for lunch afterwards. And he said, you first. I said, well, I told them there isn't any plant that really contains estrogen. And did you tell them the same about testosterone? He says, no, because pine pollen is pure testosterone.
Wow.
Have you worked with pine pollen at all?
I have it, and that was one of the gems in your book. I always love to read herbal books and learn new things. We're always learning as well as teaching. And that was just something that I just devoured. Page 319, I'm looking at it right now, testosterone star pine pollen. I was unaware of that. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, if you live in a wooded area in the springtime, when the pines are blooming, you will notice on the windshield of your car and on any non-moving body of water like a pond, you will see what looks like a kind of light yellow kind of floating scum or haze on your windshield, and that's pine pollen.
Wow.
Because the pine trees are separated. There's male trees and there's female trees. And when the female trees are blooming, the male trees make their pollen and send it by the wind out to the females. So they have to create huge amounts of pollen, which gets into the air and then falls down. And that pollen, according to Stephen Booner and scientific studies, is virtually identical to human testosterone.
That's amazing. So do you get it at a Chinese apothecary, or do you know of any good
There's
sources?
There's a variety of different places. I think Woodland Essence is one place that sells it. I know I was just down in I have taught frequently. I wasn't just there. I have taught frequently at the Lost Pines area in Texas, which is Bastrop. And, of course, that entire forest now has burned to the ground.
Oh.
But the last time that I was there, which was when the Lost Pines were blooming, there was so much pine pollen that we went out with a little whisk broom to the outdoor furniture and were able to collect an entire cup of pine pollen in about 10 minutes.
Wow.
And then I called Stephen Booner, and I said, Stephen, we got a cup of pine pollen. What do we do with it? And he says, you tincture it. And he says, it's hydrophobic. It's afraid of water. So you can't use regular alcohol. You have to use high-proof alcohol. Well, we were way out in the Lost Pines, and nobody wanted to get in their car and drive way, way, way into town to get any of that. And we had some 100-proof vodka on hand. So like good students everywhere, we ignored our teacher, put our pine pollen into a jar and covered it with 100-proof vodka, shook it up, you know, and said, well, gee, it looked, it goes into solution fine. Half an hour later, we looked, and the pine pollen was floating on top of the vodka as dry as if it had been in a desert for 100 years. It was literally the definition of hydrophobic. It's like, I'm not going to have anything to do with that. One of the women took this on as a project, and she shook it vigorously for 2 to 3 minutes twice a day for the next 6 weeks, and she was able to get it to go into solution.
Interesting. I probably would add some, you know, adjuvants like some lecithin in there to maybe make it a little bit more soluble. When I'm going to try experimenting with that, Susan, and get back to you.
Yeah, I do, because it's a really, really interesting kind of thing. And then, of course, what both Stephen Booner and I had to say to our students was, these herbs, in order for them to be hormonally effective in your body, require good gut flora. I haven't seen any studies on the steroidal saponins in plants turned into the male hormones, but there's a lot of studies on looking at them turned into estrogens. And what we find is if we give, if we test women for byproducts, urinary byproducts, we can see this process has gone on, and we give those women a single dose of antibiotics and then test a week later, there is no conversion going on.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, well, you always, I always say the same thing when it comes to people with that really need their guts. I mean, we all need our guts, but, you know, we need this activity of the, you know, the bioreactor in our gut to make the plant extracts active. And I talk about that a lot in my classes. So I'm glad you brought that up. Fascinating.
Yes, you know, it freaks me out a little bit to realize that there are 10 times more bacteria in my body than cells.
Yeah.
Right? That basically I'm only like less than 10% me, and the rest of me that I consider me is really a whole bunch of bacteria. And if we kind of turn the clock back several hundred years to when microscopes were first being used, there was a surgeon who looked at a section of intestine under the microscope and saw it teeming with bacteria. And we were just kind of, you know, the human group was just making the connection between bacteria and disease. And so this surgeon leapt to the, to him, obvious conclusion that these bacteria in the gut were causing disease. And he wrote a book about it in which he suggested that in the future, all children would have their colon removed at birth and thus would be able to live forever because the main source of disease had been removed.
Wow.
This is actually what the whole idea of colonic irrigation rose up from, is this mistaken idea that these bacteria should not be in our gut or in our bodies.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, talk about the PSA. You have a chapter on that in your book, and certainly there's a lot of interesting information. It's so confusing for men, and now with this new findings and things like that, I would say to people that there are other tests out there, which you mentioned quite a number of them, that you can get potentially if you want it, some measurement, or if you do have some genetic potential towards cancer? Because, you know, I've seen prostate cancer in men with very high PSAs and with normal PSAs. So that's when, you know, we all kind of scratched our heads and say, well, let's just see if we go back to the digital rectal exam and make sure that we're nourishing and tonifying the men and helping them energetic. I like your idea of using blue light to calm the prostate and lower PSA. How would one do that? Would they just get like a blue light at the hardware store, or where would you get light therapy?
As far as I know, any blue light. And you know, I just pulled an ad yesterday for a blue light toothbrush.
Interesting.
Yeah, so blue light is kind of coming into its own. Let's go back a little bit here.
Okay.
And look at the development of the prostate.
Sure.
All fetuses are female. We all start out female. We all start out with female sexual organs. The uterine environment is very high in estrogen. And if we have XX in our cells, we use that estrogen and we retain our female status. If we don't have XX in our cells, then we can't use the estrogen, and our female sexual organs turn into male sexual organs. The uterus becomes the prostate. So the prostate, we think of the prostate as a uterus, but it's a uterus with a hard covering on it. There's like a hard outer layer of tissue on the prostate. Now, unlike the uterus, the prostate has a period of time in which nothing happens there. The prostate achieves, as we said, its adult size and its sexual potency at puberty. And from then until what we call the midlife point for a man, which is in 40s, 50s, somewhere around there, the prostate is not capable of cellular replication. So it just kind of sits there. And, of course, there's environmental damage. There's radiation. There's chemicals. There's a variety of things that happen within that prostate tissue. The prostate can't switch over cells. It can't replace cells. It can't handle any of the damage that has occurred until we get to that midlife point, at which point the prostate, kind of like Sleeping Beauty, wakes up again and says, oh, my goodness, what is happening? And for most men, this wake-up causes the prostate not only to begin to repair this damage, but to create new cells as well, and to create more cells than were there before. And this can lead to a benign enlargement of the prostate. The difficulty for modern medicine is there's no easy way for us to tell the difference between benign enlargement of the prostate and prostate cancer, which causes the prostate to enlarge as well. Thus, the prostate-specific antigen test, the PSA test, and all of these little charts about, you know, what's normal, what's elevated, and so on. And what my reading taught me was if you're going to get involved in PSA at all, what you need to do is to have a series of PSA tests and to not pay any attention to any one of them, but to look and see if there is any change. So if I have a PSA test this year, and then you have another one in a year and a half later, and another one a year and a half later, and they're all the same high number, it's not a problem.
Yeah, you mentioned that the prostate needs to be moved, and so I guess the same thing. The readings, looking at a continuum of readings showing any movement there would be very important towards understanding the man's health and prostate issues.
Exactly. We know that some men simply produce a lot of prostate-specific antigen. It's going to show up in their test. Doesn't mean they have cancer, whereas other men produce so little that they can actually have metastatic prostate cancer and still have a PSA reading that's within the range of normal. And this is one of the reasons why the Preventative Services Health Task Force says, just forget it with your PSA reading. What can you do to keep your prostate healthy and to prevent prostate cancer? You're going to really like my answer. Men, eat more pizza. And especially pizza with anchovies.
Yeah.
Cooked tomatoes are the tastiest way to prevent prostate cancer, according to more than 50 studies. 2 servings a week of cooked tomatoes can reduce your risk by 36%, 4 servings by even more, and 10 servings a week can halve your risk of prostate cancer. So not just pizza for dinner, but cold pizza for breakfast too. Can be wonderfully helpful for you, and make sure that you get double garlic on there. 3 cloves of garlic a day can cut your prostate cancer risk by 50%. What are you going to drink with it? Green tea. Okay, I know this is sounding a little like health food at this point, but you know, green tea has a real caffeine wallop. If you haven't experimented with green tea, man, you might want to get on the green tea bandwagon. It can give you a lot of energy, and men who drink the most green tea can reduce their prostate cancer risk by 5%. 3 cups a day reduces the risk by 70%. Not bottled tea. It's got to be actual tea that you brew yourself.
Right, right. Well, I hear this music in the background, so I guess it's time to take a quick break, and we'll get right back into the story. Being that we started late, maybe they could give us a short break. Thanks again for listening, and stay tuned right here to Progressive Radio Network, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z with author Susan Weed. Now we're back with Susan Weed, and she's the author of Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. And we're talking about, this is a second part in a two-part interview, so you can always go on to the archives at Progressive Radio Network and look for the first half of the program when we talked about dealing with women's health. Today we're kind of focusing on men's health with Susan, and we're talking about prostate issues. Susan, thanks a lot for joining us again. And you were talking about green tea and certain dietary things for preventing prostate cancer. And I think that's the best way to certainly do that. Lots of quercetin, eating lots of apples, making sure that men are getting good sulfur in the form of sulfur-containing things, cabbage, garlic, kale, one of my favorites. Also horseradish and things like that are very high in sulfur and could be a nice condiment. I love making horseradish. I was just out digging horseradish this weekend, on this lovely weekend we're having.
I was thinking of doing the very same thing. I got 2 new horseradish roots from my brother and planted them in the spring, and I was eyeing them and trying to figure out whether or not they would let me take any. Avocados are a really exceptional source of beta-testosterone, which is a proven protector against prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. And especially when eaten with other foods, avocado can boost the absorption of cancer-preventative proteins. I'm always on to the women here. I say, don't bother to eat salad unless you are going to put at least 3 tablespoons of oil on your salad. Because, right, of course, we get no nutrition of any kind from raw food. Right. Remember that it was cooked tomatoes that showed the reduction in prostate cancer, not raw tomatoes.
Interesting,
and
yeah,
similarly for the kale that you're talking about, and this is astonishing to many people, I cook my kale for a minimum of an hour when I have the time. I do like grandmothers everywhere used to do, which is to cook the kale all day long. This does not turn it into mush. It's still kale, you can tell exactly what it is, but it frees up the minerals so that you actually get those minerals from the kale, and it does not make it stink. One of the things I don't do is I don't send any of my vegetables for swimming lessons. I put just about an inch of water in the bottom of my pot, even if it's a huge pot of kale, and I just keep an eye on it while it's cooking to make sure that I don't run out of water so that there's just barely a sip of water left when I'm done cooking. I don't do the other traditional thing, which is to throw a piece of ham fat in there with it. But when we eat our kale, we are careful to make sure that we put oil on it. Or if you don't like using oil, you can use avocado. 3 tablespoons of avocado on your salad gives you 13 times more beta carotene, 8 times more alpha carotene, 4 times more lutein, and 4 times more lycopene.
I know you're a huge fan of, as am I, of nettle. Now, you know, I think in some of the herbal traditions, they say the leaf is more for arthritis and the root is more for the prostate, but it's really the whole plant, I think, that is super important. So would you pull up the whole nettle plant and cook it so you can get aspects of the radix or root, or would you just use the leaf, Susan?
Well, I use nettle in a variety of ways. In the spring, I harvest the top growth of the nettle and cook that. Mm-hmm. And I drop the fresh nettle into boiling water, cook it at near a boil for about an hour, turn the heat off, let it steep for 4 hours or longer, and then cook it again for an hour before I serve it. This allows me to get some of the minerals from the nettle. As the nettle gets bigger, I start harvesting it to dry, and I hang it up 2 by 2 in a dark place with good air circulation to dry, and then cut up those leaves and stalks and pour 1 quart of boiling water over 1 ounce by weight of dried nettle leaf. This makes a very strong, nourishing herbal infusion, which can give us up to 250 milligrams of calcium and a great number of other minerals, vitamins, and, of course, high in protein and so many phytonutrients, and most of them we just really don't know what they do.
Right.
Nettle seed is generally the last thing I harvest from the nettle, and that's the nettle that kind of got away from me and went all the way out to seed. And I harvest those seeds, and then I use those seeds in my cooking. But there are people who are making tincture of nettle seed and suggesting it as something that can have a very powerful effect on the prostate, and especially on reducing the size of the prostate. And yes, some people are also harvesting nettle root and generally tincturing that nettle root late in the year, about this time of the year, or even later, because we haven't really had a hard frost yet.
Oh.
And I do like to wait for that. Nettle has a very kind of searching root. It's got kind of small roots, but there's a lot of them, so you're not going to kill the nettle plant by harvesting some of the root, nor do you need to dig the whole plant up. If you give it like a little tug, you can kind of see where the roots are and just dig up. You know, one of those roots, they spread out rather than going down deep, because nettle is searching for minerals and other things in the soil. And the nettle will actually move around to the areas of the highest fertility for the soil. Not having a prostate, I have not had personally had an opportunity to use nettle root at all. Have you been using it?
Yeah, I find it does help with, like you mentioned in your book, freeing up the testosterone to be used by the cells instead of keeping it bound. So I've had some good success with that too. Yeah,
it's not easily available. I mean, you can easily go out and pick nettle root, but it's not something that I have found. Like the primary places that I buy herb, I don't see them selling nettle root.
Right, exactly.
So it's a little difficult to access. Also, the one that has been studied is the root of annual nettle.
Oh, I see.
And that does not grow very well in the United States. What we have is the perennial nettle, which is Urtica dioica.
Right.
And the nettle root that we want is from Urtica urens.
A little bit of difference there.
Just a little bit of difference, right. One herbalist said, well, you know, you can just dig up any nettle root and dry it and make an infusion. In other words, use a full ounce of dried nettle root in a quart of boiling water, allow it to steep for 4 hours or overnight, and drink up to 2 cups a day. And he said, you know, I think it works just as well as buying the prepared root of Urtica urens.
Huh. Well, I'll wait till the new moon to do that, because right now we're getting closer to full moon. I'm working on the top parts of the plants at this point.
Yeah, we want to wait until we get cold and we get that darker moon down into the ground. I'm doing digging roots this weekend.
Yeah.
With my students, so.
So what in all, because we're running out of time for the program there, it seems like there's a lot that men can do for balancing their health, whether their potency is an issue, whether they're incontinent or having trouble urinating, whether they lost interest in sex, whether they're gaining a lot of weight. Oh, we didn't talk about fat. You know, I think that there's some research that the more weight you're carrying, especially in your gut, you know, the pons, as they say, that can also influence your testosterone levels to a negative. Although I do hear you as far as like testosterone's not the end all be all as far as your, you know, sexual health or your prostate health and things like that. But certainly
we have different kinds of fat in our body.
Yeah.
And I often reassure women by grabbing my belly and saying, you see this? And I can jiggle it up and down. I said, this fat is not hormone-producing fat, and it doesn't have any effect on your body.
I
said, now you go up to a man with a beer belly, and you try to grab that belly and jiggle it. It's not going to happen, is it?
No.
That's solid fat. That's called visceral fat, and that is hormone-producing fat, and that is fat that, as you say, can lead to a variety of unhealthy consequences, syndrome X, type 2 diabetes, heart and blood vessel problems, the whole thing. So if it jiggles, you're fine. If it's solid, uh-oh. And there's a big divide here between men and women. Men tend to be healthier if they stay lean and they keep their diet at about 20% fat, which is fairly low, whereas women tend to be healthier if they stay a little on the juicy side and keep their dietary fat to over 30%.
So any classic formulas that men should be taking all the time? I know Shouwu is one that you talk about in your book, and you actually tell the little history of Mr. Wu, or excuse me, Mr. He, or Mr. He, as I guess some people pronounce it in Chinese. And some of these great tonics, I mean, these tonics or adaptogens, they've been around for so many millennia. They have to work well, and that would be, I think, the first place that men maybe should start.
That's certainly a wonderful place. I'll tell you, my favorite is the Amazonian Prost Nut Butter by our buddy Jim Duke.
Okay.
And we all love Dr. Duke.
Yeah, his stories. He makes me laugh.
Doesn't he?
He's
just so joyous, and he's so warm-hearted, and he's a great singer and songwriter, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So he says, take 10 Brazil nuts, 100 pumpkin seeds, a half cup of cooked black beans, 2 teaspoons of tomato paste, and 2 capsules of powdered salt palmetto. Open the capsules up and blend all those ingredients together. And every day, spread a couple of tablespoons on some bread or some crackers and eat it. And he says, do not be tempted to save time by doubling the recipe. You want all this to be fresh, fresh, fresh. So you just make a little bit at a time. And that recipe is in down there.
It's in that book.
In Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way, back in the recipe section.
Now, your book's put out by C.S. Lewis and Company, is that true?
No, it's put out by Ashtree Publishing.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ashtree Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
So Ash, A-S-H, treepublishing.com.
Yes.
Some of the comments people have said is entertaining, educating, and inspiring, information-packed resource. I would say that's really true. You can read it cover to cover, but what I like about it is you can always refer to this. I love books that what does Susan say about this? Damn it, let me pull it off my shelf, look at it, boom. Oh, yeah, right, and it just kind of gives me a little bit of a nudge. You know, we have the information there as professionals and herbalists, but, you know, it's nice to see that and find the wisdom in this book. Certainly a vital guide for men and women, young and old, and I love it. I think it's going to be one of my favorites. It already is. I've already have it dog-eared to death.
Dr. Z, am I going to be seeing you down in St. Pete in a couple of weeks?
Oh, at the Herbal Conference? I don't know if I could make it, but
okay, I do want to let people know that
I'm
doing a pre-conference workshop on down there topics for both men and women. So if you're interested in the American Herbalist Guild and you want to come, I don't think you have to be a member to come to the conference. I think they're fine for interested people to come. And just the day before, I'm going to be teaching all day long. And Aviva Rahm wrote the introduction to Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. And Aviva is going to also be teaching a pre-conference workshop as well. So if you want to come down to the beautiful, sunny, warm beaches of the Gulf Coast of Florida, come and join us, not this weekend, but the following weekend. We'd love to see you there.
The American Herbalist Guild Conference. Susan, it's been a pleasure, and we'll have you on again at some other point just to talk about herbal medicine and some of our other programs. And stay healthy always, and keep us tuned in to this wise woman way. I appreciate all your help and wisdom.
Green blessings, Dr. Z.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for all the love and care that you pour out to all of us.
Thank you. And that does it for this edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z wishing you the best. Stay healthy, folks, and do it the green way. Bye-bye.